Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. On this episode, we're talking to a new friend of ours, Kate DeLeo.
So Kate is the chief brand architect at her own company called Innoble, which she helps brands win more work.
Yeah, this conversation really kind of was, it was succinct. It was simple. And when it comes down to it, if you have a revenue problem, if you have a selling problem with your company or your brand, it basically boils down to a messaging issue.
Right. Can you explain to your future clients exactly what you do?
Can you provoke them into asking questions that you know the answers for?
What separates you from your competition? These are questions that everybody thinks that they know, but then when they get into the conversations at a networking event or with a future client, they don't know.
That's
and it's
right.
Very difficult, and then you end up rambling on and on and on, kind of like how we ramble on and on and on. Enjoy the show.
Enjoy.
All right, great. Well, we're in conversation with Kate DeLeo. Kate, we usually get started with you giving us a little information about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So, well, thanks for having me, guys. This is really an honor to be here, and I'm excited to chat with you. So I'm Kate DeLeo, and I'm a brand strategist. Simply put, I build brands that win more work. I'm kind of an accidental brand strategist, guys. I mean, in the sense that I didn't start out my career saying, oh, I'm going to go into branding. I actually planned and was starting my journey to focus on a PhD in anthropology. And the market crashed. And I remember talking with a professor and he was like, listen, I'm going to highly recommend that you consider getting out of academia right now. Because of the field that we're in, we don't know how that's going to shift. Go get a job. Just go get a sales job. And so I dove out of academia and finally found my way after a couple little steps to my first real sales job, which I was cold calling IT professionals and selling training over the phone. Now, it was seriously hilarious because that's like the worst type of sales job you could take because clearly I was thinking in my 20s, because no IT person wants to be sold to and or be on the phone ever, right? But here's what was so crazy, and I share this story for a reason. That particular job was the beginning for me in branding. Interestingly enough, what happened was is I was doing really well and they had eventually put me in charge of running a huge pipeline. And at one point, the head of sales came over to my desk and he's like, you know, like, tell me about like what you're doing, Kate. You know, you're pretty new and you're young. And of course, like me being the problem child, you guys, I look at them and I'm like, oh, I hated all your scripts. I threw all of them out. I couldn't stand them. And then also I unsubscribed all of my people from all of your drip marketing campaigns. You know, and they're all like offended. They're like, oh my God, how did you do this? Well, what had happened was, is I was delivering a very, very short little brand pitch on the front end and 15 seconds, either in an email or over the phone. I was saying, hey, my name's Kate. This is what I do. This is how I solve your problem. This is how I'm different. And I just hit it fast. And it was working. It was actually working to get that prospect to want to email me back, to want to stay on the phone or call me back and have a conversation. So I share that because I'm a total accidental brand strategist, but that period of my life in my early 20s when I started in sales was the beginning of me diving into brand and marketing. So I quickly got recruited out, worked in agency settings, worked in corporate settings, you know, and all the while, you guys, I was like the typical millennial side hustler. So I basically was a side hustler for about almost 10 years doing this on the side until finally about 2 years ago, I went out on my own. And really what I do at the crux of what I do for clients is work with them to help them create a message that's going to build common ground with their audiences and actually help them invite that audience to buy from them versus the competition. That's really what I do with branding. And I'm really passionate about it. And I've kind of created a unique approach in the way that I attack that work so that clients are able to get out the door running quickly with a message that's going to help them increase revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting that you started off in a totally different area and profession. You kind of stumbled into it, you know, which definitely reminds us of our story and how, you know, though we, with you know, creating stories and everything, it's very, very similar to what we actually are aiming to do in the, you know, the whole ecosystem of entertainment. And the similarities between the two are amazing. But I feel like the fact that you kind of stumbled into it and discovered a talent for it, it's extremely interesting. And I think that, you know, anthropology, though I don't know a lot about it. I'm sure there are parallels between the two as well. I think I was supposed to take an anthropology class at some point, and then I went with geology instead because it seemed like it was going to be easier for my gen ed.
There's like two camps of anthropology, guys, which is so interesting. So there's this camp of anthropology that is on the side of like bones and human structure and evolution of humans. And then my area was cultural anthropology. So what I was studying were things like ethnography and culture from those people's perspective, writing ethnography and story from the actual like people's perspective, not my own. Studied things like marketing and economy and racism and a lot of that kind of stuff. And so it's weird how it's come kind of full circle, how the training that I got back in academia of how do you listen and document and write from that perspective to create a story that's really their own, not your own, was something that I apply now to my work. But yeah, if you'd asked me 15 years ago if I was going to be doing marketing, I would have laughed at you. I'd be like, what are you talking about? No, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. So one of the great parts of speaking to people like you, and you know, we have to thank Kevin CO for introducing us, and Mike Lewis for validating the introduction. it's such a crazy world out there in branding and marketing and advertising and blah 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 blah. And our audience is sick and tired of us complaining about all this crap, but
we don't complain.
Well, a little bit.
We set out logical arguments to help them understand why we're so frustrated.
Right, there you go. But very often when people come to us and they say, I want a video, I need a video, what they're doing is they're just repeating what they're hearing, right?
Right.
And on 95 to 100% of the time, the people that ask that I need a video, what they're really asking for is, I don't know how to sell what I'm selling. I have no idea what my messaging is supposed to be. I'm pretty confident if I got in front of a camera for 15 minutes, at some point somebody would be like, oh, that's what you do. And then they would understand. So I think this is a very, very relevant conversation.
Yeah.
There are brands out there that are struggling to just identify exactly what they do, struggling to separate themselves from the competition. That do maybe similar work, or maybe they feel like they have a complete unique approach that nobody's paying attention to.
Yeah.
And we surely run into those people all the time. And the first thing is like, well, I'm just not doing enough to explain it. I'm not out there enough to explain it. But very often we go like, listen, man, we gotta strip this down to the nuts and bolts and start talking about like, what is it actually that you're trying to do? And that's the work that you do, Kate, because you help comb through the craziness. And a lot of the times, when you're as a business owner, you'll be staring at a wall that you've painted and you're like, I hate that color. And you're just too close to it. You can't possibly see the whole picture. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that you guys bring that up. And I mean, you know, there's certain philosophies that I've really like learned and clung on to in the course of my journey. And one of them is that I do believe that brand is the path of least resistance to revenue. So said differently, when you can, in that 15, 30 seconds, whether somebody hits your homepage of your website, watches your content, sees an ad, hears you verbally, that you can say to them, hey, this is what I do. This is how I solve your problem. And this is how I'm different. And it's crisp. It's short. It's to the point and it's provocative. You know, that's the meaty stuff, right? That's going to get that prospect to go, oh, now that's interesting. I want to have a conversation. I want to take the next step. Mm-hmm. And what I think many, many entrepreneurs and business leaders struggle with is this misconception that they have to be a salesperson. And that is so incorrect. In fact, what we know to be true is that most great entrepreneurs, seriously, are not necessarily salespeople, but what they are visionaries. They are ideators. They are innovators. And they have an innate ability to tell their story quickly and effectively so that somebody buys into it and wants to go on the journey with them. Mm. Really, what sets the pack apart between entrepreneurs who are struggling with revenue and those that are doing a great job of bringing in those leads and closing those deals is that ability, actually, not that one's smarter than the other, but it's the ability to synthesize your message and boil it down and to have confidence in what you say. And so brand at the crux of it is really helping clients frame up this idea of a message that is provocative. Mm-hmm. I think you bring up something interesting too. Right now in the world of marketing, everybody's telling you, you've got to do this and that and this and that. Oh, I've got to do social and I've got to do video and I've got to. What we know though is it's not so much about the tactics at first. It's about pulling back for a second and even asking yourself, who am I really going after? Mm-hmm. What is really my message that I think I need to say? And that actually then determines what marketing levers you even pull, because you may not need to pull 15 different marketing levers. Right. Maybe your audience does not so show up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to be on LinkedIn.
Right.
Hey, those are more the different questions that when you have your brand down will help you be smarter about how you then execute marketing and how you execute your sales conversations.
Yeah.
Yay.
You have a point.
No, I was just going to say, then you call Mike Lewis and you stream that down even better.
Oh yeah. Right. Exactly. But, and we brought this up with, there's like about a billion points that I want to touch on, and we'll see if I can remember all of them or not. But, we've come up with this kind of, I call it a linesicle. I think yesterday I named it the attention engine, because we're in the intention business. That's what we're trying to do, is get, you know, brands' attention, and not just getting attention to them, but then keeping their audience's attention. Right.
Right.
And the key to doing that, the key to even having a glimmer of hope, is to really understand what you're trying to do and understand them as well. Right. It's a two part thing. A lot of people focus so solely on, you know, like, what am I going to say? How can I say it? How can I say it? And they don't look enough at the audience. But at the same time, it's a two-way street there, because what you're trying to say should really be coming from your audience, and what, you know, knowing where you're trying to get that information from and what they're looking for.
It's a conversation. It's not right. I mean, because you have, as a brand, you have to be willing to understand that there's a part of this conversation that already exists and you're trying to add something to it.
Right.
And if you don't add anything to it, no one, I don't care what the hell you have to say. You're not adding anything to the conversation we're having.
Did you read my website? You must have been the first.
We're just of the same mind, Kate.
Yeah, right. You know, the collective unconscious.
There you go. Right.
No, I always say like, if you hit my website, it says business is a conversation, not a transaction. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, here's the thing. People think that branding and messaging has got to be so complex. It's actually quite simple. It's quite simple, but it's profound. And it's the number one word I tell people to think about is the word provocative. You know, great brands do not shout at you like a megaphone, hoping that, like, know all these features and benefits and this does this. And, oh, you got to know this detail and this. No. Great brands do not shout at you like a megaphone with every possible detail about all the stuff that they offer. Great brands have a series of sentences and pieces in their language that provoke the prospect to want to know more. They provoke that audience to ask things such as, really, that's interesting. Tell me more. Really, what is that? What do they mean by that? Interesting. How are they different? It's provoking your prospect down the path to want to continue to read, to want to continue to listen, to want to continue to have the conversation. That's what great brands actually do.
Yeah.
It, just like you mentioned that fear of, I've got to tell my whole story. No, you don't. You've got to tell a story that does two things. One is completely authentically in your voice, because our fear is that some marketer like Kate's going to come in and write something that's totally not you. And you're like, oh, it's not me. It doesn't need to be authentic to you. Does need to talk very clearly about what you do and how you solve somebody's problem. However, it's got to hit at the core heart pain that your audience is experiencing. Sure. You've got to deeply know your audiences as well. And if you can marry those two pieces together, now you've got a winning brand pitch that's actually going to get people to the table.
Yeah. I love what you said about the provoking thought down a pathway, because that's really where a lot of our strategy of evolution of attention is, and with any video, is building off of each other. And it all blends in so perfectly, because it's like, yes, if you sit down and do an interview video and explain everything about yourself and, you know, who you are, what you do, how you solve the problem in one video.
Right.
First of all, it's boring. And second of all, you told me everything. So I don't need any more.
I don't need to explore any further point if you had to watch the whole thing. But we often say too with storytelling, and this fits right in, and it's the same strategy, is you give somebody a little bit of a taste to get them to go like, huh, I'm a little interested to find out more about that. And then you bring them in. And what we've discovered talking to people like Mike Lewis and Marcel Krawczyk is that that's the top of the fucking funnel, right?
Right.
That's the top of the funnel. You got to get them there. But in order to get them there, right, your brand messaging has to be provocative. And your storytelling has to inspire some sort of interest to get them to stick around a little bit further than just, you know, oh, well, thank God you showed up to my door with this, you know, new knife. I was just trying to cut tomatoes. I can't cut tomatoes. Look at this perfect synergy. It's serendipitous that we're here, you know, because that rarely happens. You have to invite people into. And that's something we say all the time, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, is that attention is earned. You have to earn attention. And on a branding side, if you want somebody to really fall in love with your brand and your messaging and what you do, you have to earn their love.
You do. And you also have to recognize too who you're really going after, meaning like, what is the ideal persona? You know, so often people come to me and they go, yeah, you know, I go after mid-level manufacturers, mid-sized manufacturers. I'm like, that's great, Bob. Tell me more about that, right? Like, let's unpack that a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that, right? So most of us, I think high level, we understand segments of the market we might be going after, or the first things I hear are like revenue size. But you got to go deeper than that. And the reason that you want to go deeper is you have to understand, if you show up into a room of 100 C-suite leaders, of 100 mid-sized manufacturers that you want to sell your product or service to, how do you know the 10 whose business cards you absolutely need to get?
Right. Who are
primed, ready, in need of exactly what you offer? Because not all 100 are at a point of readiness. And that's okay. They can still hear your message. There's nothing wrong with that. They're going to continue to get to know you from afar, right? As you put content out there, as you're exposing that message. However, we have to help clients think smarter about their personas and listening for symptoms. What are the things they're listening for in the conversation that would make them go, oh my God, the level of pain that this person's experiencing is making them ready to now need what I offer?
Yeah.
And that's really important to know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that that's absolutely crucial. Something, it's a lesson that we've actually learned relatively recently, unfortunately, is that, you know, when you're going out against or trying to get people to buy into, you know, once again, this is, it's not complicated, but it definitely is against the norm of video of building attention over long periods of time and content that builds off of each other. You really can talk, like you said, there, you can go ahead and narrow down who you're trying to talk to. But you'll know instantly whether or not this is worth having this conversation any further. Like, it was somebody, we were talking to Jennifer Palais the first time I met her. She was on the last podcast or two podcasts ago. And I had a 30-minute conversation with a gentleman before, gave the same exact, you know, not pitch, but, you know, description of what I do. And he was like, oh, yeah, we do storytelling. We do more. We're fantastic at it. I have some of the best people. I'm like, okay. Lasted for like 25 minutes, most of them go half an hour. And then when I talked to Jennifer, it was an hour and a half, right? And that's how you can, I mean, for me, that was definitely a defining feature of knowing like, well, first of all, she's just as frustrated with this whole situation with marketing that we are. But we've run into people that at least at the very least they go like, oh yeah, oh that makes a lot of sense. Tell me more, right? Compared to some of the people that you just don't waste your time trying to track them down.
Yeah, right. Well, you don't waste your time trying to explain something to someone who thinks they know what you're trying to explain to them.
Right.
It's to the point where it's like if they're saying no, if they're cutting you off in the middle of a sentence and saying that no, we're good on that. We don't need you to tell our story. Trust me, I've done a bunch of interviews. It's like, okay, yeah, I guess you got it. But, you know.
In that situation, I always say, bless and release them. You know, let them go on their way. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't even mean that like negatively at all, right? Like not everybody needs what you have. Not everybody.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, technically speaking, and this is the number one fear of most people that I work with is, they're like, yeah, but Kate, like I have a revenue situation, right? Like I'm here talking to you because I want to grow my company and I want to have revenue. And technically speaking, I'm so confident in what I offer that everybody needs what I offer. And I'm like, technically, yes. However, what's far more important for you to understand is who is the perfect person that's at the right point of readiness. And can you niche in and do what we call like a 70-30? So said differently, in the world, maybe 100% of your population needs you. You want to create a brand message that's going to hit the 70% who are primed and ready and need that very specifically, totally recognizing that you might have a 30% outliers. So a great example is I primarily work with startups and small businesses. I love the small business space. I'm really passionate about it because I work with founder-led groups where I'm in the room with the founder and I'm able to, in like 3 to 4 weeks, help them get their message done collaboratively with them in the room. Mm-hmm. Now, I do work with larger companies. You know, I've worked with anything from $300 million to billion-dollar companies. But they're outliers. They're like a 30% that maybe onesie twosie here or there may come to me, and that's great, and they're referral based. But am I actually using my message to target them? Not at all. They typically would kind of sprinkle in, there would be a referral here or there, but I actually didn't go and intentionally create a brand that's going to speak to them.
Right.
So it's kind of knowing, like, who do you really need to go after that's actually going to get the most extreme amount of value out of what you offer, more than anything else.
Yeah.
It's like niching in. What do they always say? Like, niches lead to riches, I think is like the saying or something. But it's kind of true, actually.
Right. And it's
similar. I've only heard
snitches get stitches. But yes, but this is a much better way to explain our business.
Guys, yes.
There is a marketing company out there that's called like Jailhouse or something that uses that exact phrasing in their marketing to go on brand with their brand name.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and sometimes that's really catchy, you know, but once you know your audience, you know, then it becomes a matter of understanding candidly, like, how do you create a message that provokes? Now, there is kind of a formula for it that I teach in my book that's coming out this fall, which is called Not On Brand, is going to be teaching this entire approach, which is what I do with clients. But in the world of like messaging and branding, which can sound very fluffy and very like, oh, it's all strategy. No, brand should be very tactical, by the way. It should be very tactically used. Mm. There's really like three big statements that are critical to have a company like nail down if they're really trying to win work. Now, we typically know messaging such as like mission and vision statement when it comes to brand. Traditionally speaking, and these are very important statements, they're more internally focused, meaning like they're the kind of the compass, that guide point for your organization of where you're going and what are you trying to accomplish, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they're really important to nail down. And I always do that with clients where we review those or revise them because we have to know where you're pointing your ship.
Right.
However, other sentences that are probably far more important for a prospect to need to see and then need to be able to like synthesize and understand are going to be your tagline, your value proposition statement, and then differentiator statements. And I always give this example. And it's like, if you were to go to my website, it's the same exact pattern that I follow on my website versus like if I have a conversation with you. So if I'm in like a networking situation, like you and I've known, you guys, we've known each other, so we already had this conversation. But if I'm meeting somebody brand new and somebody says, oh, Kate, what do you do? Tell me about yourself. What do you do? Right. We get this question. Mm-hmm. I say, oh, I build brands that win more work. Mm-hmm. That's my tagline, actually, for my company. A great tagline says what you do.
Right.
I build brands that win more work. Now, remember that word provocative? It's provocative. And right. Every single time I get somebody to go, really? So what do you mean by that? Like, tell me a bit more about that. Have you ever seen somebody react that way when you say what you do? If you get that kind of reaction, actually, it's very good. Mm-hmm. Because what you've done is you've provoked them to ask a question to go down to the next piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, Bob or Frank and Jack, you know, interestingly enough, what I mean by that is I'm a brand strategist and I help you create common ground with your audience by clarifying your message and really ensuring that your audiences buy from you versus the competition. Mm-hmm. Value proposition statement. Mm-hmm. It's almost verbatim what is on my website. I maybe phrase it a little differently naturally in conversation. But what I'm telling them in my value prop then is, here's how I solve your problem. I specifically can solve your pain. It supported what I said at the front with my tagline, which is, I build brands that win work. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a strong tagline and you've got to have a strong value proposition statement. Now, here's what's interesting. 9 out of 10 times, most of us and as founders think, great, the person's ready to know about my products and services.
Right.
Incorrect. Highly incorrect. Do you want to know why? Okay. I just gave you guys two very unique pieces of information, right? Like this poor person, imagine Bob's never met me before. And poor Bob is hearing me say, this crazy chick is telling me she builds brands that win more work. She's going to help me clarify my message so my audience buys from me versus the competition. Hold on a second. So here's what happens. It's called buyer psychology. Like the brain just got all this new data that I gave him, right? So you know what the brain does? It's going to make a comparison. He's going to try and put, Bob's going to try and put me in a box of some sort, not negatively, but actually intentionally. He's trying to make sure he understands.
Right.
So he's like, you know, when you get new concepts thrown at you, you're like, is it like this? Is it like this? Hold on. So the reaction that I get every time is, okay, so are you like a graphic designer? Are you an agency? Are you a social media person? Like, what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. Ah, perfect. You see what he did? He wants to know how I'm different. Mm-hmm. Great question, Bob. I'm very similar, but I'm just a little different. And here's why. And then I'll hit my differentiator statements in big bullets. I'll go price for the little guy. I only focus on branding. I educate you through the process. I'm quick and agile. Boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. All right. So why am I giving you this context? So by the way, if you went up to my website, you'd see the same order of tagline and you read down value prop and then you read down and then differentiators. Okay. Because when you bring the client through in 30 seconds or less saying what I do with your tagline, how I solve your problem with your value prop, and then how I'm different, differentiators, you have one of two options that's going to happen. The first option is the person goes through that and they're like, cool, anyway. And they're not, they don't even care. Fine. They're not even at a point of readiness. And I'm like, no skin off my back. Right. I knew now in 30 seconds that I don't need to even waste time. We're not right for each other, but they're great. I want to build the relationship and the connection, but I don't need to think about anything else, right?
Sure.
On the other hand, here's the magic sauce. When you give that brand trifecta, you deliver that brand pitch, and then you get the how, what question, you hit the mark. When somebody says to you, okay, interesting. So how does that work or what does that look like? Mm-hmm. How does that work? What does that look like? The how, what question. Bingo. When you get the how, what question in a networking situation or when they scroll down your page, they're ready to hit the learn more button and go to your services. Now they want to understand all of the nuts and bolts and all of the details and all the features and benefits of what you do. But until you tell them what you do, how you solve their problem and how you're different, they don't care yet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, no. You know what? A lot of people that are going to be watching this pod or listening to this podcast are going to go all the way back to the beginning because we ask you the same question, like, who are you and what you do? And I'm 90% sure you said the exact same thing. I'm like 90% sure you said the exact same thing. So I think you are very on brand.
So why don't I just give this little dissertation? It's not to preach at you, but you mentioned, said, do you know how the conversation can go two ways, right? You can have it where one goes 25 minutes and one goes like an hour and a half.
Right, right, right.
It's okay. But when you clearly were on with how you delivered your pitch, right?
Sure.
And then you allowed that self-selection to happen where the one person like, hey, we're not a fit maybe for business. Great person, good relationship, cool. Great networking, but maybe not like a business opportunity.
Sure.
And then you have another one where you're like, whoa, this is totally going to gel into something. And because all of a sudden, what did you do? You started asking more questions, provoke. And then an hour and a half later, you guys are talking about how do we partner? How do we help each other?
Right.
That's the natural path of a great brand pitch, actually.
And I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I think that, you know, I was just paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot there, but it's very simple too,
right?
You know, and I think that, you know, you hear all the time about an elevator pitch, and I think we should get rid of the elevator pitch. Fuck the elevator pitch, because what you just described was far better than an elevator pitch. It's kind of like it's a little bit like a sales script, you know, I put air quotes around that for people that aren't watching on YouTube, right? It's kind of like a sales pitch or a sales script, but it's really just trying to get to the meat of who you're talking to, number right. one.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And also making sure that what you're saying makes sense, right? Yeah. And making sure that that's well thought out.
Yeah. And it's like, you didn't use any unnecessary words either. It's all the razor's edge. It's like, it cuts deep. It's like, oh, well, this person knows exactly what they're doing.
Right.
Because it's very simple. And I understood every part of that sentence, even though I was intrigued to know a little bit more about what you meant by that. But it was succinct and clear, where a lot of times elevator pitches can kind of be like, they're out of air at the end of it. You're like, whoa, you guys just said too much.
Well, it's funny.
Or you need to work on your breathing.
It's funny because when I do this program, my workshop program with clients, that's the deliverables, like, you know, because we write the brand together, right? So we actually, you know, like a lot of agencies, and this ticks me off. Have you ever seen this for agencies? And I'm in a marketing, guys, but it used to drive me nuts where, you know, a marketing agency will come on in, they'll do like a 2-hour intake, and then they go away. And like 8 weeks later, they come back. Like $20,000 later, they're like, here's your brand. And you're like, this is crap. You know, and it's like this terrible like situation where it's like off, right? Mm-hmm. No, I like work in the room with the client to actually like herd the cats out of their brain, because they actually already have the brand up here. Kind of like you guys do in storytelling, right? You gotta pull it out of them. But then it's about synthesizing that and helping them boil it down. And to take the 35 ways that they're saying it and go 1, 2, 3 and have them go, oh my God, yes, that's my line. Yes. Right. Now, here's the thing. What?
I like the visual of herding cats.
Oh, it is. It's herding cats.
That's a great
It's so fun. Because visual. And everybody always says this. They're like, oh, are you going to have to like do a whole rebrand for me? No, in 10 years, I've done 2 full rebrands. What 99.9% of companies need is not a rebrand. What you have to actually do is a more of a quarter turn of your message, because you're doing something right. And it's not about reinventing who you are, actually. It's about actually helping you more unpack a lot of the stuff that you have been using and going, what is really hitting the mark and what's the right order of how you say those things? Because maybe you're leading with this up top, and what if we led with this sentence, and that's going to provoke them to want to know that detail.
Yeah.
And so it's actually teaching people more about order of operation, so they don't feel like they're having to reinvent who they are. Now, I bring all this up because you talk about elevator pitches. Well, in my program, that's definitely part of the deliverables, is we give 2 variations of an elevator pitch and we write it out. But once we've written their tagline, their value proposition statement, and their differentiators, guess what their elevator pitch includes? Just that.
Right.
That's it. And there's 2 ways you can do it. You can do that variation, which is more of what I call like the conversation pitch. It's kind of like that back and forth that I gave the example of.
Right.
They understand how to respond to those sentences, just clearly stay in the same order every single time. And then we do create a simple like 15 to 30 second pitch that literally they're just saying, hey, my name's Bob and I, my company, this is how we solve your problem. Boom. Here's how we're different. So the cool part is instead of it feeling like some major thing that you have to like memorize, a super complex 30-second to 1-minute spiel that's not authentic and you feel like you're reading off of something.
Right.
It's actually just speaking to the same 3 things over and over and over again that are on your webpage that you can say verbally, that are on your printed collateral, that are in all of your media and marketing. And it frees up the entrepreneur to be authentic.
Yeah.
No longer feels like a pitch.
Right.
Well, that's nice.
Right. Let's build off of that, because that's something that is prevalent in all, it's prevalent in everything from that the brand tries to do from the beginning of just getting the prospect in the door to trying to get somebody that they've never met before into the door through commercials or anything else like that, outward email marketing, whatever. If it has marketing at the end of it, I'm talking about that, you know, sales and everything, where it feels very much like, you know, it's very pitchy, right? And ask anybody in the world if they want to be pitched to, and the answer is no, unless you're an exec and you know the guy who's coming in, you know, Christopher Nolan's coming in to pitch you on his next thing that's going to make you a bunch of money. Yeah. Other than that, nobody wants to get pitched.
No one wants to get pitched. No one wants to get sold to.
Right, well, exactly.
You know what it is nobody wants to be in a sales funnel, but everybody wants a seat at the table.
Yeah. Sure. Sure.
You want to put, if you're telling me I can go have a seat at the table with Damon Johns or, you know, any of the major leaders in the world, I'd be like, oh yeah, yes, of course, you know, right? But nobody actually wants to have a real like sales pitch. They want to have a conversation. They want to be heard. They want to be validated.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to send you a couple of links to a blog written by Jeff Gomez called The Collective Journey. I'm sure you're going to find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And one of the parts that he talks about that when this new age of storytelling, once again, Jeff Gomez, one of the premier storytellers of our time that you've never heard of, doing work.
Well, I mean, if you're an active
listener, of the podcast, you know that to be true. But many people haven't heard of this man. But one of the parts that he talks about in The Collective Journey, and you know, with the invention and the usage of social media and everything, is that storytelling is now porous, right? It's no longer a TV ad coming to you. You absorb the information. You can't say anything back, right? We could literally go ahead, and I've said this on the past like 5 podcasts now. Like, we could tweet the president of the United States, and there's a chance that we get a response back.
Yep.
So no longer is it that, the Super Bowl ad comes on and I'm just like, wow, Paramount has all those famous people. Fantastic. Now I'm going to buy Paramount Plus. No, it's not like that anymore. I don't know if it ever was like that, to be honest, but it's not like that anymore. Now, you see that commercial and there's all this, not just analysis of it, but there are people reacting to it in the way that they're like, well, I don't know about this. And like, it's kind of funny, whatever. It's a conversation now. And now the brain has to reply to it, right? Now, we could take that in a couple different directions, but the one that I was kind of focusing on was the idea that you have to lead the horse to water, right? And pitching people is never going to get them there. You have to intrigue them, right? You have to provoke, right? You have to provoke them. And you have to hopefully get them to want to continue on with you.
And, you know, it's like one of the, it's like going off the other Super Bowl commercial too. It felt like all of those commercials were decided and created in some sort of vacuum.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? That's what Jeep is going to talk about? Like, really? That's what Scott's Green is going to talk about? Really? That's what Paramount decided on? It's like, who were these? Was it just a group of like 3 executives being like, this would be a good idea? It's like, did they even discuss? It's like, I felt like it just all happened without any sort of plan as to the bigger picture. Was it just to shock and awe? Was it to throw a pebble into a stream and hopefully it made a splash? Like,
right.
That goes back to something that we've been talking about a long time about how you have to build this attention. And if you're going to spend millions upon millions of dollars for 30 seconds, you better have some type of engine going there. Like, you want people who don't have any stake in this game to be like, oh, you got to watch this because this next clip and this big thing that's been happening online is going to actually premiere on this particular day right after the second half of the Super Bowl.
Right.
My favorite Super Bowl ad this year was the Alexa commercial. Did you guys see this?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Oh, what my happened? God.
Yeah.
So why was this so impactful from a brand standpoint, in my opinion? Couple things. First off, it was brilliant advertising in the sense that they directly showcased how women use the technology versus just men. And I thought that was very interesting. Two, they went into the internal dialogue of somebody of what do I really want with when I engage with the technology. Third thing is the physical product that they sell is about conversation. You physically talk to Alexa and Alexa talks back. It's a perfect representation of how a brand can impact your life on the daily. And Amazon is saying, we are part and parcel with your daily lives with our Alexa, and that we engage with you, our consumer, as a true like person. We want to be a part of your life. That's what great brands do. But the other thing that I thought was fascinating was, I think as well, was the way in which that they used humor and multiple conversations between how the husband was like, Alexa, stop, Alexa off. And where the wife was at, it was brilliant. It was brilliantly done. And it didn't shout at anybody, but it very much provoked you. For me as a female 35-year-old watching that, I died laughing. I watched the thing probably 10 times over and over and over again. I watched that commercial to look at what they were doing from a brand standpoint. And they completely hit the nail on the head, in my opinion, for us that are female viewers, probably in their 30s, maybe older, because it completely resonated with the fact of, wow, you know what? You aren't selling me. This is a company and a technology that understands that I want to engage and have a conversation with whatever I buy from. It was perfectly done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it, when it comes down to a lot of, like, especially with the Super Bowl commercials, is what they're trying to do is they're trying to, like, via Adweek and a couple of other places on LinkedIn after, you know, on that Monday, it was all they kept on saying was, well, we hope that this inspired somebody to do this. We hope that this would happen. And what ends up happening with a lot of these commercials, and this is kind of like what ends up frustrating us a lot, is that it just stops there. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Why build all that attention? Why have, Kate, why have you loved this so much that you're watching it 3-4 times? And then, you know, as we go through a couple weeks pass, it fades away. Yeah. All that attention that you built, all of it, is gone.
Then what?
Yeah.
Right, that's exactly. My point. Right, exactly. And that's the frustrating part about it.
And even the good commercials fall short of drawing you fully, completely in.
Right.
Because
there's nothing that leads you there. There was a thought provocation on your part going like, yes, you know what? This resonates with me. I understand this. Now the question is, in the coming weeks, is there going to be any follow-up to continue to have you interested in learning more, to get you to the top of their funnel, to get you to end up buying, you know, whatever, another, if you already have Alexa. Equipment? What, I don't know what, like, what do we call that? Like a piece of speaker?
It's like a home device, I guess.
Yeah. Right, okay.
I don't know how to categorize it.
Yeah. Right. But if you, yeah, like to get you to buy one, maybe to get you to sync up your entire house, right? Like what's next? And I think that's what we keep on talking about on your side with the messaging, to get somebody to continue to ask questions,
right,
to continue to lead them down a path. It's the same thing with storytelling commercials that we feel like they fall so short on.
Yep.
Is that you could build all this attention on, you know, I don't, once again, like one of our least favorite commercials was that Scott's Green Lawn thing, which was just, it just, they threw everything in the kitchen sink at it.
They did.
Literally out onto the lawn.
Every person they could. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I don't need to see John Travolta dancing on TikTok.
Yeah, right.
That has nothing to do with a lawn. And you having Stanley from The Office, which I know his first name's Leslie. I have no idea what his last name is. So I'm going to refer to him as Stanley from The Office. Him go like, you better not be messing up my lawn. And that being like the connection to the lawn. Come on. Like, I just can't. But there's no way for them to then continue that story on unless John Travolta is going to constantly be dancing on other people's lawns while, you know, like there's just nothing else they can do after that. But yeah, so that's where a lot of these things fall short. And I think that you do a brilliant job with the brand and the messaging. And now what we have to start to do is think about that for the marketing aspect.
That's correct. Once you get your message down, I mean, this is so important because I'm usually that first stop, right? So the company comes to me and they're like, hey, either they're coming with me as just an idea, or they're like, hey, we have an established organization. We realize like we're hitting the mark in some areas, but we're off in others, or whatever it is, right? They have some sort of potential pain where they're going, we're not seeing this conversion rate. We're not seeing prospects come to the table like we need them to, with their click users to click and buy, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. So once we get that message down, the next step for them is always then implementation, because I can't go in and update their website for them. Even though I am a developer, I'm not going to do that for every single client. Maybe they manage it themselves, right?
Sure.
So they need to work on implementation. And what we talk about is implementation across all of their materials. So for example, are you going to start using the elevator pitches? Have you gotten in and updated the pages on your website based on what we wrote? Mm-hmm. Are you updating your printed collateral? Maybe you have like a one-pager overview of your company that you send out to people.
Sure.
Have you updated your LinkedIn bios? Have you updated your social media profiles? And then thinking about, great, once you baseline implementation, you then need to also think about how are we going to ongoing implement that through various marketing channels.
Sure.
Again, so is that video, is that remarketing ads with Google? Is it Facebook? Where do your audiences live? What is the way that they consume content that you know? I have a technical client that actually most of their audience has really, for the last 10 years, has loved their blog, the written component, because they're very data driven and then it's very technical what they do.
Sure.
And I said, well, then why would you go and try and go on Facebook and run ads on Facebook, right? They're like, well, everybody's telling us we're supposed to be on social. I'm like, well, hold on a second. Right. Where do your people show up to learn?
Right.
Well, we all love to go to these few major blogs, and then people have slowly been following our blog, and we love the written content and the how-to documents. I'm like, then that's where you live.
Right.
Own it. Be totally good with it. So yeah. They are starting to incorporate video into their blog posts.
Sure, there you go.
Into their LinkedIn, where they'll have like an intro video and then they'll link to their written posts, things like that. But now they're staying in their lane of where their audience already lives without feeling like they've got to do everything.
Right.
From a marketing perspective.
Right.
So get your message down, baseline it across your main areas. Then you pull those levers for that ongoing content creation and engagement with your audiences.
Yeah. And Kate, when we talk to somebody that comes to us and they're like, well, once again, we're circling back to the beginning of the conversation, and they're like, well, we need this video to do this X, Y, and Z. And, you know, you ask a couple of probing questions as to, you know, like who you are and what you do. And like, what's the goal of this? And 95% of the time, right, the goal then trips them up. They're like, well, you know, unless it's tied to a specific event or something else like that, that they want to have this done for, it really trips them up. And then, of course, what trips up everybody, haven't had anybody not trip up on this question, is like, and then what are you going to do after? Like, what's the goal after? Is there any plan after? Have you thought that far ahead? But it's like, well, you got to get that baseline down. And it's like, you should go talk to Kate, because, and then Kate will send you back to us when you're ready. It's a primary care doctor in a way.
Yeah.
you know, like, we're a specialist. You don't go to a specialist. You're like, my elbow hurts. Yeah, it's
I'm an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Like, me to like actually go in there and look around? I mean, go to talk to somebody else. See if they you might just be leaning on it weird.
Yeah, right.
And this isn't to like debunk that we all don't need to market. How do I say this in the most frank way possible?
Just listen. You can ask me. I can repeat you.
Here's the deal. And I'll be honest with you guys. I'm kind of an anti-marketer. I'm a little bit of a disruptor in the fact that I've never spent a dime on marketing for myself.
Yeah.
Ever. And my whole entire company has been referral based. Now with writing my book, am I going to start to do other things? Of course. Am I going to create video? Of course. Am I going to start to move that needle? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's times and places and seasons for that. And many of my clients who are even very small businesses, it's also recognizing too, to say, Bob, listen, if you don't have a $5,000 a month marketing budget, that's okay. But the very fact that you've had your brand pitch down means that when you show up in the right room and you're talking with that person, they're going to want to have a conversation with you. Now, what would that do for your business if you saw an increase of meetings that come out of these networking scenarios? And Bob goes, oh my God, that would be huge for me. Or the number of demo calls you set up for your software, or whatever that typical next step conversion is, right?
Right.
The two things that we see when your brand pitch is working, the two most important metrics that you should be looking at, especially if you're even in B2B services, and you're like, I don't really know how to track a metric, right? I'm not tracking a website conversion where they're filling out a form, Kate, or they're clicking to buy through Shopify.
Sure.
What do you track? Number one is number of prospects to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is that means, like, for example, you show up in like a happy hour networking thing, right? Or one of the lunchtime networking things. How many meetings did you book after that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge conversion that you need to be tracking.
Sure. Yeah.
The second thing is your sales cycle time. The second thing that I see for clients is not only number of prospects increasing that they get to the table to have the sales conversation, meaning because their brand pitch got the person to want to hold the conversation to have the sales pitch, but their sales cycle decreases significantly. Well, why? Because you got them in 30 seconds to tell them what they need to know to want to know the nuts and bolts about your services.
Yeah.
Said differently, they're now opting in to want to be ready to understand how this could work for them.
Right.
Instead of holding a first meeting, you guys, where they just are like, well, tell me what you do. They already know it. In fact, they met you in that networking room. You told them what you do. You told them how to solve your problem. You told them how they're different. They're like, now that's interesting. So guess what happens? Bob's like, I want to talk with you, Kate. I'm like, great, Bob. I'll see you in 2 weeks. What's Bob going to go do? He's going to go stalk me on my website. He's going to go look at LinkedIn. He's going to make sure like it resonates and my message will resonate because I got it implemented. Mm-hmm. If Bob holds that meeting still and Bob shows up on that call, knowing all this stuff, because I'm transparent on my website and I've got my brand message out there. Mm-hmm. What are the chances that Bob's ready to talk about this for himself? Pretty high. Meaning now it goes from instead of 1, 2, 3, 4 conversations to a proposal, you get maybe 1, maybe 2.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a really different conversion situation and a really different sales cycle situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And being against marketing, makes sense to me. I mean, we talked about this with Mike Lewis, about the, what it can eventually happen in a, it's a very utopian.
Yeah. Right.
The greenhouse idea, greenhouse effect, right? Yeah. That, you know, as you continue to build attention, right? Once you have your brand messaging and everything, all of that out down, and then you end up engaging with us and we're able to, you know,
build this,
do the audience insight and deep listening and understanding like what's actually pulling the strings behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And create this content that builds off of each other. And by the way, when we say content, we're not just talking about video. I mean, when you mentioned the blog thing, it's huge. It's huge. The podcast, the podcasting, blogs. We're working on a project right now where it's like, well, in the future, we're hoping to do live events. Like that's long attention. That's where we're trying to get to.
Of course.
You can't do that right away. No one
will show up.
Yeah, right. Nobody would show up.
And you just spend all this money.
Well, yeah, right. But you'd have to spend millions of dollars on just the promotion of it, you know. It's like
right, and that's my point,
you know. And you can't buy attention, so the fact that you spent millions of dollars won't result in millions of dollars coming back to you,
right? And so that was my point, was that, you know, you have to, it's in a utopian world, all these pieces end up like a greenhouse effect in which you have audience members bringing in new members that they know that they would enjoy this content and enjoy this product, enjoy this service. And it's a cycle. And then all of a sudden, or a line sickle, right? As I like to say, or the attention engine, or however we end up branding this.
No, the attention engine sounds like something that was coined in the 80s.
I think it was.
Well, we're gonna repurpose it.
I can validate that one. Yeah, I think it. You know, was an 80s or 90s thing.
I think it might have been a song by the Top Fours.
Or, oh my god,
the Top Fours. Yeah, but the whole idea there is that, right, once again, it starts to be a greenhouse effect. It starts to just result in people bringing people in, and then thus your marketing spend gets slower and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yes, it actually
does. To the point where you don't need to really do a ton of prospecting, because once again, we'll say it a million times, the best form of advertisement that was ever created and ever will be created is word of mouth and referrals. So there you go. If you got enough people in there that love the stuff that you do, they will bring people in.
Yeah. It really is true. And I think when you're authentic in who you are as well, and when your brand is truly, truly authentic for your tone of voice, your character as a company, your culture, when you feel like it's so just something that you would say day in and day out, you're going to own it. You're going to use it. You're going to talk it with confidence. And at the same time, it's going to really resonate with your target audiences. I think, again, it's not about coming up with something that's just snappy and catchy. Like, yes, you want it, you want your tagline to be short, 5 or 6 words or less. You want a value prop to be structured a certain way. There are technical pieces that you've got to think about so that you're not creating paragraph upon paragraph of copy that like nobody's going to read. Like, yes, that's stuff that I walk clients through. But what I want them to always remember is your message is you. You are your brand. And so when we create these sentences, this is about just amplifying who you are. And it's fascinating to me because no matter the size of company I've ever worked with, and I've gone through this personally, what I see happen is a newfound excitement and a newfound confidence to really own their expertise when they get their brand message down. Mm. Instead of maybe hoping that people are going to like them or hoping that this is going to resonate, you see this new kind of like courage, almost like, oh my God, I am really brilliant at this, because they took the time to clarify, who am I? What do I do? How do I really solve my client's pain, deepest heart pain? And how am I really different from the competition?
Yeah.
And what's exciting about that is it no longer becomes a false marketing engine where it's just about celebrity or, oh, like me, please like me. No, all of a sudden you see entrepreneurs step out and really live on brand and live their brand. And that's when that referral engine turns on. That's when all of a sudden, in the course of a networking conversation, you're getting more and more people to go, I like you. I want to talk with you. This is super interesting.
Right.
You know, and whether they buy from you right away or not, you are attracting in people that you're going to do life and business with. And I tell you what, that's really powerful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, great. You know, we usually end off with words of wisdom, but it sounds like that was a pretty good culmination of the entire conversation.
You beat us to the punch there.
Usually that's what ends up
normally, happening. Normally that's when the conversation starts to wrap up and they're like, you know what? I've been reflecting on what
we've been talking about,
things I've been saying and hearing what you guys say. And I just want to succinct this down into one sentence so that people who listen to the podcast will just skip to the end and be like, oh, that was what it was about. Got the Cliff Notes version of it.
And then left.
Here's my final parting wisdom. Are you ready?
All right. Here we go.
Your brand absolutely is the path of least resistance to revenue. And you authentically capture who you are and what you do, how you solve somebody's problem, and how you're different. When you can courageously and confidently speak that message and authentically own it, I guarantee you will see an increase in revenue for your organization and in a newfound confidence and success.
Great.
Very nice.
Well, if you'd like to get in contact with Kate, you can always go down to the description. I'm sure she'll be able to comb through the weeds that are going on through your head.
And really herd those cats.
And herd those cats.
Yes.
You know what? I can't remember what the name of your book is, but I do know that it should be called Herding Cats.
Cats. It's called Not On Brand. It is coming out in October of 2021. So keep an eye out for that.
There you go.
It is teaching you how to build a brand that wins more work and how to authentically live your brand.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, maybe it should be like a little sub thing. Not on brand.
How to herd your cats. Yeah, there you go.
How to herd the cats in your head.
And then that makes a really engaging like cover photo too.
Yeah, it could be like a cat. Well, it should definitely be cats running out of your head and you herding them.
Or it could be cats inside like jumping over a fence, like, you know, herding
sheep. I feel like that right there is not on brand for me. I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean it's the title of the book is not on brand. I mean, come on.
I mean, that's,
of course, you know, we've always said that the worst type of creative is unbounded creative.
Right.
So because that we just want to make a book where cats are coming out of someone's head.
How about I have you guys do the video for my book? How about that?
There you go. We could build the whole attention engine.
There you go.
Let me tell you. Well, we'll figure that out as we go along.
Oh my gosh.
Been born in the 80s.
Yeah. Great. So thanks again for being on with us.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it. It's been so fun to chat with you this morning.
Thanks for listening.
For more conversations like the one you just listened to with Kate DeLeo, we recommend episodes 27 with John Cates and episode 44 with Mike Lewis.
And as always, if you haven't had a chance yet to check out our YouTube page, you definitely should. You could have watched this whole conversation and seen us laugh and all my wacky hand gestures that you can't quite get out of audio unless I tell you what I'm doing. And special shout out to our one and only Patreon supporter, Tony Perez, because this podcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.